This is The Unghosting of Medgar Evers, a production of WUKY, University of Kentucky Public Radio. I'm DeBron Thomas. In the next hour, you will hear poems from the collection Turn Me Loose, The Unghosting of Medgar Evers by Frank X. Walker, published by the University of Georgia Press. Frank X. Walker's poems take on the voices of Evers' widow, Merle Evers, his brother Charles, his assassin, Byron De La Beckwith, and each of De La Beckwith's two wives. You'll also hear firsthand experience and historical context of this turning point in the civil rights movement, plus a musical soundscape of 1963. Here is The Unghosting of Medgar Evers.
Oh, I wish I was in the land of cotton.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed.
Old times there are not forgotten. Look away.
You can never whip these boys if you don't keep you and them separate. I found that out in Birmingham. You've got to keep the white and the black separate.
Look away, look away, Dixieland.
Why should the black man have to go to court to get freedom when a white man in this country is free when he's born? Why should the black man need some legislation to prove that he's a human being when you don't need any legislation to prove that whites are human beings?
Well, I wish I was in Dixie. Hooray! Hooray!
The business community of Birmingham has responded in a constructive and commendable fashion and pledged that substantial steps would begin to meet the justifiable needs of the Negro community.
In Dixieland, I'll take my stand to live and die.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
Away, away, away down south in Dixie, oh, oh,
the place is Jackson, Mississippi. The date, Saturday, June 15th. The occasion, memorial services for slain integration leader Medgar Evers, Mississippi State Field Secretary for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Away down south!
Our martyred hero, Medgar Evers, was one of the individuals who participated in this first campaign 4 years before Dr. King marched at Montgomery.
In Dixie.
I'm Frank X. Walker, professor of English at the University of Kentucky, and the author of Turn Me Loose, The Unghosting of Medgar Evers. Here's how it works. Because these are persona poems and other voices, I'll read the name of the poem, the name of the speaker, then I'll read the poem. Unwritten rules for young black boys wanting to live in Mississippi long enough to become men. Rule number one, white is always right. Number two, never look a white man in the eye. Three, always answer yes sir or no ma'am when spoken to by whites. Four, always look for, use, or request the colored section. Five, never speak to, smile at, or stare in the direction of a white woman. Six, pretend your name really is boy, son, or worse. Seven, ignore all white sexual aggression towards your sisters, mothers, or aunts. Eight, always suppress your anger, cynicism, and rage, or mask it with a wide grin, pretend stupidity, and silence. Nine, if a white man says it looks like rain, wish out loud for an umbrella, no matter how dry it is. 10. If you forget any of these rules, fall back on rule number one. Willie De La Beckwith, Southern Bells. When our grandfathers strutted back from the slave quarters, still unzipped and whiskey-eyed, and on occasion forgetting it was a sweet Southern bell they were now ringing, when the mongrel evidence of their sins crowded the edge of the front porch or tiptoed around our kitchens with swollen bellies, thus began our great tradition of not knowing and not wanting to know, of never ever asking about what happened out there in the dark. But if you really know a man, you know what he loves and you know what ignites his lust, whether that be the peal and chime of a black woman's body or the silent one of her man.
Your cheating heart will make you
Merle Evers, Arlington. During the flag ceremony, soldiers folded, creased, tucked, smoothed, and then folded again with such precision and care. I imagine they were wrapping a body, a red, white, and blue mummy which they passed and saluted and honored so much so, everybody stopped looking at the casket. By the time they placed that triangle of husband in my arms, they left no doubt. I was holding his future, and what we were burying was only his past.
Gerald Smith, associate professor in the Department of History at the University of Kentucky. You know, when we look at what Medgar Evers was doing, even when he was in high school, organizing NAACP chapters, when he comes back from, you know, having fought in Normandy and after the war and all, in terms of working with the NAACP, and at one time had actually been involved with the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, was elected secretary. But Roy Wilkins, who was the president of the NAACP, advised him to remain committed to one civil rights organization. So he actually ended up writing a letter to Martin Luther King, resigning from that position. It also says something else in terms of, you know, Medgar Evers having the confidence in the local leadership. When I say local leadership, I'm talking about those who were committed on the grassroots level within the state of Mississippi. You know, one of the things that the SCLC did quite often was to send in various leaders to help organize local movements. And Medgar Evers advised Dr. King to basically allow them to deal with the situation. Let's let our NAACP chapters, let's let our Voting Rights Project organizations really focus on not only desegregating of public accommodations, but also working for the right to vote for many African Americans.
Merle Evers, What Kills Me. When people talk about the movement as if it started in 64, it erases everybody who vanished on the way home from work or school and is listed as missing. It erases the pile of recovered bodies, some burnt, shot, dismembered, some beaten just beyond recognition. It mutes every unsung voice in Mississippi that dared to speak up, fully understanding the consequences. When people talk about the movement as if it started in 64, it erases his entire life's work. It means he lived and died for nothing. And that's worse than killing him again. Haiku for Emmett Till. Up north, nobody thought it necessary to teach Dixie decorum. Did he whistle or flirt, forget the Negro's place? Was it eyeball rape? The all-white jury guzzled beer while his mama shed tears on the stand. They looked at his skull, his disfigured face, smiled, and still voted not guilty. 14 is too soon to visit Mississippi, come home in a box.
Death get a long way from home. Can't sleep at night. Grab your telephone. Something just ain't right. That's evil. Evil is going on. Your happy home. Well, long way from home and can't sleep at all. You know another mule is kicking in your stall. That's evil. Evil is going on wrong. I have part in your brother. You better watch your happy home.
Merle Evers, No More Fear. 3 months before Emmett Till arrived, Reverend George Lee was killed by a shotgun blast to the face. It was ruled a traffic accident. He had been the first to register to vote in his county. 1 week before Emmett Till arrived, Lamar Smith voted in the Democratic primary and was shot at high noon in front of the county courthouse. There were no arrests. Megger cried when he heard about young Till. Then he dressed as a sharecropper, helped find witnesses, and smuggled them out of town for their safety. When Uncle Mose stood up in court, pointed right at J.W. Milam, identified him as the killer, we thought the air would split, but it didn't. Instead, a seam opened up in that place where we kept all our fears.
Dr. Everett McCorvey, and I am the professor of voice and director of opera at the University of Kentucky. We were out at recess one day, and there was a church across the street, and having a Southern Christian Leadership Conference meeting, and George Wallace was the governor, sent state troopers and policemen on horseback to the church, and we saw these horses coming down the street. And then all of a sudden, the horses were going up the steps and into the church. And they beat everybody into the church, out of the church. Still on their horses with billy clubs. And the teachers didn't know we were watching, but it became something that I will never forget. And, of course, when the teachers found out, they pulled all the kids into the school. And we waited there until the incident was over outside, but you could hear the people screaming, and this was a sanctioned action by the governor. And to think that here we are, people who were supposed to be free and supposed to be equal citizens in this country, but this was allowed to happen. It was wrong.
The bullet, 1/3 of 180 grams of lead. Both of them were history, even before one pulled the trigger, before I rocketed through the smoking barrel hidden in the honeysuckle, before I tore through a man's back, shattered his family, a window, and tore through an inner wall, before I bounced off a refrigerator and a coffee pot, before I landed at my destined point in history, next to a watermelon. What was cruel was the irony, not the melon, not the man falling in slow motion, but the man squinting through the crosshairs, reducing the justice system to a small circle, praying that he not miss, then sending me to deliver a message, as if the woman screaming in the dark or the children crying at her feet could ever believe a bullet was small enough to hate.
A bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. A finger fired the trigger to his name. A handle hit out in the dark. A hand set the spark. Two eyes took the aim behind a man's brain. But he can't be blamed. He's only a pawn in their game.
You're listening to The Enghosting of Medgar Evers, a production of WUKY, University of Kentucky Public Radio. When we continue...
There was a time when being a white man on trial in Mississippi was like swapping lives in the barbershop or at a church picnic.
The trial of Byron De La Beckwith.
Is used, it is plain, for the politician's gain. As he rises to fame, and the poor white remains on the caboose of the train. But it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game. The deputy sheriffs, the soldiers, the governors get paid. And the marshals and cops get the same. But the poor white man's used in the hands of them all like a tool. He's taught in his school from the start by the rule that the laws are with him to protect his white skin, to keep up his hate, so he never thinks straight about the shape that he's in. But it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game. From the poverty shacks, he looks from the cracks to the tracks. And the hoofbeats pound in his brain. And he's taught how to walk in a pack, shoot in the back with his fist in a clinch. To hang and to lynch.
This is The Unghosting of Medgar Evers, a production of WUKY, University of Kentucky Public Radio. The next section focuses on the trial of Byron Dayla Beckwith. This section contains use of the N-word. Listener discretion is advised.
Afterbirth, Byron Dayla Beckwith. Killing that nigger gave me no more inner discomfort than our wives endure when they give birth to our children. The poem. Like them, a man can conceive an idea, an event, a moment so clearly he can name it, even before it breathes. We both can carry a thing around inside for only so long, and no matter how small it starts out, it can swell and get so heavy our backs hurt, and we can't find comfort enough to sleep at night. All we can think about is the relief that waits at the end. When it was finally time, it was painless. It was the most natural thing I'd ever done. I just closed my eyes and squeezed, then opened them, and there he was, just laying there, still covered with blood, but already trying to crawl. I must admit, like any proud parent, I was afraid at first, afraid he'd live, afraid he'd die too soon. Funny how life and death is a whole lot of pushing and pulling, holding and seeking breath, a whole world turned upside down until somebody screams.
We said our goodbyes long ago, never thinking we'd miss each other so. All the memories we can't leave behind, oh, we must have been out of our minds.
Music, Niggers, and Jews, Byron Dayla Beckwith. Long before George Jones and others had folks all over the country hungry for a weekly plate of hee-haw and the Grand Ole Opry, TV pretended regular, hard-working, blue-collar, proud-to-be-white folks didn't exist. Johnny Cash went on Carson in 64 and damn near set the stage on fire. His songs was real music. Not none of that monkey shine they tried to sell with white faces on the cover. But as good as Johnny was and is, American Bandstand, rock and roll, and them long-haired sissies from England made living rooms full of our young almost apologize for being born white. Dick Clark is no better than a nigger to me, and the Jews that control television is even less.
Then I looked over Jordan and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. There was a band of angels a-coming after me. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home. Well, I'm sometimes up and I'm sometimes down. Coming for to carry me home. But I know my soul is heavenly bound. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home.
Chariot, coming for to carry me home. And what did I see? Coming for to carry me home, a band of angels coming after me, coming for to carry me home. I'm sometimes up and I'm sometimes down, coming for to carry me home, but still my soul feels heavenly bound, coming for to carry me home, sweet love, sweet child.
Humor Me, Byron Daly Beckwith. I was raised with the word nigger in my mouth. In this part of the South, it is considered our silver spoon. It practically lived in every good joke I heard growing up in Mississippi. The only other good ones were about sex. But I've seen bad jokes about niggers and sex kick all the power of whiskey right off the front porch, turn it into something so mean, somebody would have to get smacked around to stir that power back up again. Sometimes it was a dog too friendly for drunks. Sometimes it was a girlfriend or a wife who wandered grinning into our man talk and snickered at all the wrong parts. If there weren't no women or dogs around, us men would pile into a truck and ride off towards the coon side of town looking for something funny. The N-word, Charles Evers. Hearing that word launched from the back of any throat brings back the smell of German shepherd breath, of fresh gasoline and sulfur air, of fear, both ours and theirs. I hear nine brave children walking a gauntlet of hate in Little Rock, and four innocent little girls lifted up to heaven too soon. Instead of a rebel yell, I hear a rifle bark. Instead of a whiskey-soaked yee-haw, I hear a window break, and children sobbing for a father face down in a pool of blood. I hear all my faith collapse on the wings of a woman's scream. I can't hear anything less and absolutely nothing funny.
When you just give love and never get love, you'd better let love depart. I know it's so, and yet I know I can't get you out of my heart.
Fireproof, Willie Daly Beckwith. He would come home from evening rallies and secret meetings, so in love with me, I could never see nothing wrong with what he did with his hands. I just pretended I didn't know what gunpowder smelled like or why he kept his rifles so clean. If he walked through that door and said, "Willie, burn these clothes," I'd pile them on the coals and stare at the fire. I'd listen to the music twixt a crackle and calm as we danced. And while the ashes gathered round their own kind in the bottom of the grate, I'd watch the embers glow like our bedroom did. Now, I ain't saying he was right or wrong. He often confused hatred with desire. But if you ain't never set a man on fire, felt him explode inside you, then die in your arms, honey, you got no idea what I'm talking about. Listening to music. Merle Evers. The right song, slow dancing through the air at the end of a long day full of kids and no husband, can not only set the tone, but put the sound of yesterday back in the air. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles crooned all the sweet words that his eyes whispered across the doorframe when he finally came home. But more often than not, it was Sam Cooke or Ray Charles and Bobby Blue Bland taking turns in my ears, reminding me how much I loved that man, no matter how mad or lonely I might have felt. The right song was like a Kodak brownie of us cuddling, or an atlas mapping out all our rough spots and the ways around them. After sweet-talking him out of his suit and tie, after he unloaded the day's burdens, we melted together in the dark beneath the covers and the crackle of the radio, the sound of my guys singing backup and Megger's jackhammer heart finally slowing to match our leaky faucet as he fell asleep in my arms, completing the soundtrack for a perfect night.
This is a mean old world to live in, all by yourself. This is a mean old world to live in, all by yourself. This is a mean world to be alone without someone to call your own. This is a mean old world to try and live in all by yourself.
Gerald Smith, associate professor in the Department of History at the University of Kentucky. Those who had gotten away with these sort of crimes in the 1960s had assumed a certain air of arrogance to the fact that they would never be prosecuted. And, you know, they were shocked that, you know, times had changed, people had changed, and there was a new generation up front. And so this generation was not going to tolerate that kind of behavior that was totally unacceptable then and is unacceptable now.
What they call irony, Byron De Lubeckwith. There was a time when being a white man on trial in Mississippi was like swapping lies in a barbershop or at a church picnic. Looking across at the Judases that helped find me guilty the third time was like looking at a souvenir postcard of a lynching. Only it's me playing jump rope with the tree, and the Christmas morning faces in the crowd is all carpetbaggers and Jews.
Right or wrong, I'll always love you. Though you're gone, I can't forget. Right or wrong, I keep on dreaming. Though I wake with that same old regret. All alone, I knew I'd lose you. Still I prayed that you'd be true. In your heart, you love another. But right or wrong, I'm still in love with you.
Big-hearted, Thelma De Lubeckwith, you are wrong to think my man a monster or a lowly coward 'cause he grins at you from across the courtroom. Your shallow faith won't let you see his generosity or his compassion. Don't you see the courtesy he extended to you by opening up a hole in that boy's black back and not his face, allowing you and your children the dignity of an open casket, a vision of perfect sleep instead of a bloody stump where his head rests now? Stand by your man, Willie De Lubeckwith. Like any smart woman, I've stormed out, even divorced him once to make my point. But anybody who even stops, takes time to think about it, and still makes their lips ask me why I'm so proud to be Mrs. Byron De Lubeckwith, ain't never heard Tammy Wynette sing. And she's from Mississippi, too.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman, give him all your love to just one man. You'll have bad times, and he'll have good times, doing things that you don't understand. But if you love him, you'll forgive him, even though he's hard to understand. And if you love him, oh, be proud of him, 'cause after all, he's just a man. Stand by your man. Give him two arms to cling to, and something warm to come to when nights are cold and lonely. Stand by your man.
Sorority meeting. Merle Evers. My faith urges me to love you. My stomach begs me to not. All I know is that day made us sisters somehow. After long nervous nights and trials on end, we are bound together in this unholy sorority of misery. I think about you every time I run my hands across the echoes in the hollows of my sheets. They seem loudest just before I wake. I open my eyes every morning, half expecting Medgar to be there. Then I think about you, and your eyes always snatch me back. Your eyes won't let me forget. We are sorority sisters now, with a gut-wrenching country ballad for a sweetheart song, tired funeral and courtroom clothes for colors, and secrets we will take to our graves. I was forced to sleep night after night after night with a ghost. You chose to sleep with a killer. We all pledged our love, crossed our hearts, and swallowed oaths before being initiated with a bullet. One Mississippi, two Mississippi. You got old plantations. We got shotgun houses. You got sprawling verandas. We got a piece of front porch. You got beautiful gardens. We got cotton fields. You got Ole Miss Law School. We got parchment prison. You got Gulf Shore beaches. We got riverbanks. You got debutante balls. We got juke joints. You got bridge parties. We got dominoes and spades. You got mint juleps. We got homemade hooch. You got your grandmother's china. We got paper plates. You see a proud history. We see a racist past. You don't remember lynchings. We can't forget. You got blacks. We got the blues.
When that midnight hour was chiming, I was in my room
climbing. I was in my room alone. Yes, and when I came home this evening, I found my baby gone.
You are listening to The Unghosting of Medgar Evers, a production of WUKY, University of Kentucky Public Radio. Coming up next...
For every 100 Southerners teeming with hatred, there's a set of kind blue eyes full of hope. There's a young heart unafraid of change.
The past, the present, and the future.
Looking up at the stars above, I tell you it's a miserable feeling. You love.
Listening to The Unghosting of Medgar Evers, a production of WUKY, University of Kentucky Public Radio. I'm DeBron Thomas. In this section, we focus on the past, the present, and the future.
Merle Evers, Gift of Time. When I was able to see beauty in a world littered with scars, when I discovered stores of memories that a bullet couldn't quit, when I watched a son grow into his father's face, his laugh, his walk, I saw how faith could be restored and was finally able to imagine that before he fell in love with guns, before he lost his mother and his childhood, before he needed a reason to hate, to feel threatened, to push back against imaginary walls collapsing in on him like August heat and no fan. I imagine before all that, little Byron was good. He was clean. He was innocent. And I finally understood that trouble don't last always. Merle Evers, White Nights. For every 10 Beckwiths defending the right to wave the Confederate flag, there's at least one Kennedy. For every racist governor and flaming cross, there's a white Catholic priest dodging bricks, wiping off spit, bleeding from the temple in the thick of a march. For every 100 Southerners teeming with hatred, there's a set of kind blue eyes full of hope. There's a young heart unafraid of change and a reason not to fear or pity them all.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Believing in him, Merle Evers. Whenever we needed more confidence than we woke up with in the morning, God would come in a song, wearing a black woman's voice, a voice that sounded like that faraway look in Reverend Martin Luther King's eyes. When she opened it up, it wrapped its arms around all our fears, our doubts. It lifted our hearts and spirits and took up so much space, there was no room to hate back. Every time she laid down a verse over the roar of fire hoses, attack dogs, and police batons, our own voices would join hands, pick it up, and let the chorus carry us as far as we needed to go.
Everett McCorvey, the underlying theme is never forget. It's something that I have admired in the Jewish faith, where as a people, they remember the atrocities that were done against them. And I think we as African Americans have to do the same thing. We have to remember those things. We have to remember these events so that they are not destined to return.
Heavy weight. If Mississippi is to love her elephant self, she needs a memory as sharp as her ivory tusk, with as many wrinkles as her thick, thick past. If she forgets, She need only reach back, caress her keloid skin, and run her fingers across the braille history raised on her spine or the bruised couplets around her supple neck. For Mississippi to love her elephant self, she need only open her blue-gray eyes and move. Move as if she carries the entire weight of history and Southern guilt on her massive head. Move in any direction as long as it is forward. For Mississippi to love her elephant self, she must ask for, extend, and receive forgiveness. But she must never, ever, ever forget. Merle Evers, moving to California. Dying can't compare with living, with death and loss, grief and anger. Standing up for truth and justice is much harder than marrying silence. Climbing out from under the heaviness of hate is the hardest thing I've ever done. Surviving a husband is something I prepared for. I practiced and practiced being strong enough. Surviving Mississippi took Fannie Lou Hamer strength, something I didn't ever think I had.
Everett McCorvey, if you go to college, you can take African studies or African American studies and you can learn this history. But where is that happening in elementary school, middle school, and high school? You know, certainly we learn about Martin Luther King, but do the students learn about Medgar Evers? Do they know his history? Do they know the story of Emmett Till and the history there? I think there are so many historical figures who helped to shape this country who are not being taught in the schools. And so in some ways, I don't blame the young people for not knowing the history. I blame the system for not teaching the history.
Thelma de la Beckwith, now one wants to be president. After that first harvest, they took to the streets and chanted, "After him, there be no more fear." But it took them 45 years to grow back their spines after the so-called civil rights lions were slaughtered like lambs. I look at this new one standing here, shameless and shiny, faking humility and confidence, an educated mongrel peddling false hope. But even though we won, the victory is ours because it took them 45 years to rebuild their backbones, all those years to unshackle their fear. 45 years to raise another boy, man enough to send home in a box.
Paul and Silas bound in jail, had no money for to go their bail. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on.
Gerald Smith, I think that whole mentality is rooted out of the family tradition that they grew up in. We have to understand that, you know, the people of that generation, particularly in the state of Mississippi, had, for lack of a better word, seen hard times, and they knew poverty, and they knew what it was like to be dehumanized publicly and privately, and they knew how to take a little and make much. And, you know, when you think about where they had come from and what they had seen, you know, you can beat a person down so far, and the only place they have to go is up. And so realizing what their parents and grandparents fought through, I think in many of their minds is that we not only owe it to ourselves, but we owe it to them because they sacrificed so much that we might have what we have now.
Merle Evers. Evers' secret family recipe. Prepare closed minds with patience. Peel ripe distrust with smiles. Stir in a generous portion of kindness and willingness to do the work. Add commitment and determination. Massage out doubt and fear. Blend in a drop of daddy's blood and two of mama's tears. Season with hope and change. Let sit for a generation. Distill as a salve. Rub deeply into your children's hands, feet, and hearts. Now vote.
Everett McCorvey, I think we all celebrate as a nation that we were able to re-elect an African-American as president. And Medgar Evers' wife closed the her closing prayer, Something Within, again, another hymn that had come from a spiritual.
We ask for your guidance toward the light of deliverance, and that the vision of those who came before us and dreamed of this day, that we recognize that their visions still inspire us. They are a great cloud of witnesses, unseen by the naked eye, but all around us, thankful that their living was not in vain. For every mountain, you gave us the strength to climb. Your grace is pleaded to continue that climb for America and the world.
Like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too.
Funding for the enghosting of Medgar Evers was provided by the University of Kentucky's College of Arts and Sciences, and the College of Fine Arts. The poems were written and performed by Frank X. Walker. The collection of poems can be found in the book Turn Me Loose, The Enghosting of Medgar Evers, published by the University of Georgia Press. Thanks to Dr. Everett McCorvey and Dr. Gerald Smith for historical context. This show has been produced by DeBron Thomas, production supervisor John Lumagi, and executive producer Tom Godell for WUKY. The song list and list of poems, along with bonus material, can be found at WUKY.org. This is a production of WUKY, University of Kentucky Public Radio.
A long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.